Welcome back to the Brexit Brits Abroad podcast. My name's Michaela Benson. Today I'm going to be talking to Nando Sigona from the University of Birmingham about his research on EU families and Euro children in the UK. So Nando, I first wanted to talk about the way in which the EU nationals seem to be featuring in the discussions around Brexit in the media, but also in politics. And I think that it's fair to say that it's, you know, this idea that there are 3 million EU nationals living in the UK is quite prominent. And one of the big disputes has been around the idea of them being used as bargaining chips. But these are just the headlines, aren't they?
Yes, certainly. I mean, the status of the EU nationals in UK is one of the three priorities set by the European Commission at the start of the Brexit talks. This means that in order for the talks to move on, the negotiation to move on, the status of the European citizen, both in UK and the Brits in Europe, has to be solved. This is why we heard quite a lot about their status in the last few days. The problem is that the starting point of the European Union and the British government are quite significantly different. And at the moment, we still try to find out if they are reconcilable. What happened in all this is that the legal status, the uncertainty of legal status, also become an uncertainty about everyday life, an existential uncertainty. And it's very much felt by the EU nationals in Britain at the moment. And you just need to look through the debate and discussion in their online forums to really see how much this precariousness and uncertainty about their future and their children's future is causing distress, anxieties, and also pushing some people to actually leave the UK.
So that's this kind of the starting point for your project, isn't it? Looking at these families, at the children of these families as well.
The starting point for us was very much the idea of looking at people not as individuals, but within their family units. Also because very often migration decision making is not an individual decision, but is made in a broader network of families, close families and large families. And very often people refer to the future of their children as a motivation for taking or not taking a specific option about the future. So what we are trying to do is really to explore the extent and the impacts of Brexit on these European families. But another point of departure for the research is not to assume that the European nationals and European families are something other from us. In a sense, it's not something that necessarily or easily that we can easily disentangle from the British population, which seems one of the assumptions in the current public debate.
Do you mean the British population in Europe or just the British population more generally?
We seem to be talking about us and them, you know, the Brits versus the European national in Britain, has necessarily two separate and bounded entities, you know, as two groups that are clearly marked and separate. If you start to do the work the way we are doing this, working on family connection, on the legacy of 40 years of EU membership, things get much more complicated. The families are mixed. You have plenty of mixed status families in UK with the people with British nationality, with other European nationality, with dual nationality. And so for them, and this is one of the key things we're trying to find out, is how within the families this tension in the broader political context is reverberate and is experienced, and people what they do to cope with it.
I mean, this is a similar thing to what we're finding with the case of the British people living in the rest of Europe, which is that actually quite often, well, as soon as you get past that one person or that couple, that, you know, they're in relationships with all sorts of other EU nationals from the point of view of, you know, their son married this person from Italy or, you know, all of those types of things. And so it gets very, very complicated, doesn't it? This kind of entanglement of what it means to be a European national versus what it means to be a British national.
Yeah, we should also not forget that, until 2019, actually being British is also being a European national, in a sense, a citizen of the European Union. So it's actually this further complicated issues. You know, very often talks about, you know, how the EU nationals are feeling about this deprivation of rights, the deprivation of status, paying very little attention about the sense of deprivation of rights of the British nationals in UK, for example. You know, if you think, for example, a mixed nationality couple with a British national, with a French national, for example, in the sense of being separated by the French family, so having to go through the Home Office in order to get visas for your mother-in-law to come to visit, if it comes to that, is actually extremely distressing, and is also very much reshaping how people feel about themselves, you know, the sense of belonging to Europe, but also to Britain.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe you could lay out a little bit for us the stakes that we're talking about when we're talking about EU nationals in the UK and the issues around citizens' rights and Brexit.
I guess the main issues that are currently being discussed is what happened in terms of the rights to stay and settlement once the UK is no longer a member of the European Union. The British government came up with what they call the generous proposal, generous offer of a new status called settled status, which is in a way acknowledge many of the rights that currently people have, but with some significant difference in terms, for example, of the reassurance that this settled status is not going to change in the future. In our project, we look at these European families and we divide them in five groups according to the nationalities of the main partners. So, for example, we're looking at couples of both Polish or both French nationals. We're looking at couples with which one partner is Polish and the other one is French, for example, or cases in which one of the partner is from Germany and the other one is from India. And finally, the case in which you have a British national married with a German or an Italian or a Spanish. Each of these different, we call types of couples, will be affected differently by Brexit. And what are the worries for the future are slightly different. So, for example, especially for couples in which the legal status of one of the partners depends on their EU national partner. So, for example, the German-Indian couples, their situation is extremely precarious because the moment that the German partner is no longer allowed or is no longer allowed to stay in UK or is no longer allowed to family reunion according to the European Union rules, this may, for example, make the Indian partner become undocumented from the moment that the UK is outside the European Union. This is partly because the rules about family reunions are different between the European Union and Britain, with the British rules much more severe or much more demanding in terms, for example, of income thresholds and other requirements. The other big uncertainty is, for example, related to the possibility to get family members to come to visit or stay for a longer period, for example, and an elder parents that need support and you want to invite them to come to join you in UK for 2-3 months while they feel they get better. That's maybe no longer possible, as is no longer possible now, for example, for non-EU migrants in UK. There is the issue also, and this is particularly important, of the transferability of pensions and other welfare entitlements. If you decide, for example, to go back to your country of origin or to another country in Europe. And this is particularly important in relation to the current regulation on your permanent residency. So a EU national will lose the right to permanent residency in UK if they are absent from the country for more than 2 years. So assume that, for example, you are an academic, you want to go on a visiting fellowship in US for 2 years. By the time you come back, you may no longer be allowed to come back to the UK, even if you have a house here, for example. So people have a lot of uncertainty about what to do about their future, and this also forces them to rethink some of their plans.
Of course. I mean, what you're describing is a situation where there's the potential that these EU citizens, citizens of other European Union member states, find themselves on a similar footing to third country nationals. Is that how you see this, the proposal for settled status, or is there something else going on there?
From the point of view of the British government, they really take as a starting point the fact, well, we got already a system that we applied to non-EU migrants. Why shall we not use this one also for them? Problem with this, and what's actually is often also a reason for discussion and very heated conversation among EU nationals and non-EU nationals living in Britain, is that the starting point is different. So if I was coming to live in UK from India, I knew since the beginning what were the rules for my stay. In a sense, I applied for a visa, I went through the one of the Thai routes, and in a sense, that was the parameters of my stay in UK were very much set from the start. What did the European national complain about is the fact that here, while they've been here maybe even for 20, 30 years, the world around them has been changed, and now they have sort of different rules are going to be applied to them, and they are really sort of nothing. No consideration is taken for all the fact that they've built their own life according to the previous set of rules. So there is this sort of different starting point, which I think is really important if you think in terms of the loss of status and the sense of loss and belonging that is very much challenged among EU nationals at the moment. So the fact that they're really forced to rethink about who they are and what they're actually doing in Britain.
I think you're referring here to the kind of the human and emotional costs of Brexit for those populations, in a way that actually I can see a lot of resemblance in the lives of the British people in the European who are living in other European Union member states as well. It's really marked this sense of being in limbo, of finding themselves and finding all the rules being rewritten at a time, sometimes at a time in their life, which makes it also particularly problematic. So I guess that you've come across situations where there are people who are in even more precarious positions than others. There's not going to be no unilateral effect of Brexit on these populations, is there? It's going to be quite diverse.
There is a huge diversity among them in terms of socioeconomic background, education, occupation, position within their life stage, for example. What is interesting in the conversation that is now ongoing between the British government and EU is this emphasis on the people that are now legally residents in UK, so since as part of their sort of permanent residency and according to the EU rules, they can also continue to stay around. However, some of the criteria for establishing this sort of right to permanent residency have been very much called into question. So, for example, the one relating to the health insurance that many people never had before the referendum, and then it became so important when they applied for the permanent residency. Now we know that the British government is reconsidering this health insurance requirement, but there are also other issues. In order to stay, you have, for example, to have a specific income. Then it's actually extremely problematic for people that have already reached retirement age, for stay-at-home parents, or for people with that are unable to work for whatever reason, or for young people that are just leaving university and they have not yet entered the labor market. The point is that while if you are an international migrant, a non-EU migrant in Britain, when you apply to come to the UK, you have to fulfill specific criteria. The most sort of obvious of is to be somehow useful to the economy of the country, let's put this way in inverted commas. Up until now, if you were a EU national, EU citizen in Britain, these criteria of sort of economic contribution were much less dominant in a sense, because the idea was we are all EU citizens, and actually the movement, the freedom of movement, is a founding principle of what we consider to be the European identity. So it was not only about money, it was not only about freedom of circulation of goods and services, it was very much about creating a sense of shared belonging to the European project. So mobility has always been enhanced and promoted as part of this sort of broader political and social project. Although within the UK context, you rarely heard talking about this, especially during the referendum campaign. So in a sense, if applying a more economic lens to this form of to the mobility of EU nationals, then it means also that groups are excluded. Another group that is particularly vulnerable, for example, is the European homeless, or for example, the Romanian Roma that live in UK. Very few of them will comply with any income criteria or with the fact of having well-established jobs or a permanent residency or sort of in UK. They will find much more difficult to comply to the criteria for becoming permanent residents. And so they are much more vulnerable in any transition deal after Brexit happened.
I wondered if you could reflect a little bit more on this question of identity and belonging on the basis of, I know the project's in its very early stages, but I mean, one of the things that became very apparent to me when I was in France recently doing research with British people there was exactly how disturbed people have found their identity as a consequence of this ultimate shift. And it, you know, turns out that that actually that citizenship meant a lot more to them than perhaps people might have thought. That ability to move, that ability to kind of travel around, to live where they wanted to live, to work where they wanted to work. So I wondered if you could tease out some of the ways in which that might be coming across in the work that you're doing. I know that you're doing a kind of a blog as well, an autobiographical blog about your own experiences. So I wondered if there was some space to pull that out a little bit for us.
One of the group we are planning to work with, it's UK-born children to these European families. We think that they are particularly interesting because they may not have necessarily the problem with the legal status. A lot of them have already British passports, for example. And we are not only looking at people that just were born 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, or 10 years ago. We want to interview people that were born to European families also 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So people that grew up as British and EU citizens at the same time. And try to talk with them about how do they feel about this change of the politics of belonging around them, or the political context. So it's not just only about the coping strategies or the what actually people are going to do in terms of stay or living, applying for passport and naturalization. There is something more existential, something more profound that Brexit has generated and mobilized inside people in terms of emotions and sentiments. I mean, I remember the many people talking about a sense of loss and the mourning for the loss of this European when the referendum result came out, so this sense of complete, I see the world around me profoundly shake, that people had to go through all the stages of the mourning and the bewilderment, in a sense. And they're now starting to organize and thinking about how to respond to the changing circumstances. The problem is that the day that the referendum result came out, obviously there was this sort of moment of almost shared or common sufferings. I mean, especially if you were living in an area where you had a very strong Remain vote, like I live in Oxford, for example. I mean, people were on the street trying to talk to each other and try to reassure each other, and there was people hugging, and people, some people were emotional, etc. The problem is that since then, and this is very much something that happened, for example, when there is a natural disaster or when there is someone has lost a dear person and so they start the process of having to come to terms with the loss. The problem is that since then, there has been this uncertainty, this continuous, like almost emotional roller coasters that is following the Brexit negotiations. So it's like as if people cannot really plan the future because it's still very uncertain what to do. People are sort of keeping their option open. Some people have applied for permanent residency, but then it turned out to be not very useful because then the government want them to apply again for this, potentially for this settled status. Other people are thinking of applying for naturalization. And you can see, interestingly, you can see quite significant increase among old member state nationals. So, for example, German, Italian, French, Spaniards, for example, that they are applying in quite significant numbers for naturalization, while other groups, like the Polish, they were already applying before for status. Perhaps because they knew that their position was much less permanent than the other people thought.
So I think that, you know, you're highlighting some really familiar themes to me from the work that I've been picking up too. This sense of, you know, I think it's become very, very clear that this has been a major political moment, probably the most major political moment in most people's lives, I think. And that actually that's very deeply and viscerally felt. There is this emotional cost to it. And I think that the way that you talked about grief and bereavement is particularly a good way of thinking about, you know, actually, how do we think into these questions about identity and belonging as a consequence of Brexit among these particular populations? So moving beyond, as you said, the sheer, you know, the economic, the strategizing, all of those types of things, and actually asking those questions about the depth with which people feel this and what this means for people who have grown up, as you say, you know, been 20, 30 years, have European Union citizens with the European citizenship of another nation state living in Britain. So, okay, just to kind of to close then, I think that, you know, it's really clear that what you're trying to draw out is how this population is a very diverse population. And within that, there are people who are more precariously positioned than others. the kind of the people at the margins that we know, as you said, the Roma, for example, or people who are homeless, but also some of these people in, you know, what we think of as ordinary family situations, perhaps, where perhaps for a short period of time, one of the partners has stayed at home to look after the children. What's that actually going to mean when it comes to being evaluated in terms of your right to continue living in the United Kingdom, should a deal over citizens' rights not work in their favour? So I'd just like to thank you very much, Nando, for drawing out those themes, which are so close to the work that Karen and I are doing about British people in the other EU nation states at this point in time. And yes, so thank you very much.
You're welcome. Nice to speak to you.
Nice to speak to you too. Thank you for listening to the Brexit Brits Abroad podcast. If you've enjoyed what we've been talking about today and want to find out more, check out our website, www.brexitbritsabroad.com, or you can follow us on social media via Twitter, at BrexpatsEU, and on Facebook. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And I'll speak to you again soon.